Devices Radio Network.
Franco is pretty smart, but Franco is a child. And when it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Hey, what is up, guys? Welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott McNally. You're listening to episode number 84, and today we've got the next installment of Huge As Fuck. Today we have with us IFBB Pro John Jewett. John is an exemplary student of getting huge. He put on an incredible amount of mass, and he did it in a really short period of time, which it's mind-blowing. Wait till you hear his story. He was competing in light heavyweight to middleweight to back and forth, never really reaching his full potential as a competitor. He worked with Jansen and dialed it in, got into incredible shape, and from there, post-contest, he just exploded. He went from middleweight division all the way up to a legitimate heavyweight bodybuilder. He did that all in one season. Now, if you've been doing this for a while, you know how ridiculous of a mass gain that is. Pure muscle, too. That's stage weight we're talking about. And there's a really good chance that most of us aren't going to be able to do that. If you've been doing this for a while, you know that. But at the same time, I don't want to take away the possibility that you might be able to. This might be your time, just like it was John's time. He's got a lot of cool stuff, guys. So let's get this thing rolling. IFBB Pro, John Jewett. Here we go. He just fucked. Welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott McNally. Today, we are doing the next installment of Huge As Fuck. And with me today is IFBB Pro, John Jewett. John, thanks for being with me, man.
Thanks a lot, Scott. I wanted to do this for a while and I've been a listener of the show, too. So to be on the other end and actually talking after all the great guests that you had, it's an honor, to be honest. So I've looked forward to it.
Dude, that means a lot to me. I've got a ton of respect for what you've done with your physique, and to know there's guys like you out there that are listening, it makes me feel pretty good, man. I wish I would have asked you, because we talked for maybe just 3-4 minutes before the show. I wish I would have asked you this on the air, because it was such like a cool coincidence. I figured you were going to tell me like, no, that wasn't me. But I asked you, I was like, dude, were you out at North Americans? And the answer is yes. So it turns out, I was training at Gold's downtown Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Pittsburgh. Yeah.
And my girlfriend said to me, she was like, I think that was John Jewett that you were working in with. And I was like, huh, interesting. Probably not. But I remembered it, though. And it turned out, yeah. So and you remembered that, too. You remembered guy work in with you, huh?
Yeah, I do. I do remember the machine and I can't recall even what was going on. I remember like you were a bigger guy that was definitely competed, and I was, but I just remember it, which is really funny. You know that Gold's, they changed it like in one day to a completely different gym. I don't know if you went that Saturday to work out.
After I went there that one time, I never came back. It was not good.
No, I know. My wife went there Saturday and all the Gold's logos were gone. It was a completely different gym. They just changed it immediately in a day.
Wow.
So they honored her membership for the day, but that was it. So
wow.
But yeah, too funny that we had run in. We didn't even know it. So
interestingly too, I had wanted to get you on the show like at that time, and we just, our paths hadn't crossed yet. I was trying to find a rowing machine just to get through my workout. And were you supersetting stuff? Cause you were moving around the gym at the time.
Yeah. Okay. I was.
Yeah. And then you came back and I was like, oh shit, I took this big guy's machine. And you're like, no, it's cool, man. Work in. Then you moved it up like 7 plates and I watched you use perfect form on it. I was like, okay, he's going to do a lot of weight. let's see this guy heave this stuff around now. And you used meticulous form. You had like great, you had like really good contractions, hard squeeze, very slow negatives. And you were like definitely getting everything you could out of that weight. Like, seriously, I didn't even know who you were. I mean, I obviously saw you were a big dude, but I was like, huh, that guy really knows how to train just from watching you do that one set.
Well, thanks, man. That means a lot. You know, it's definitely come full circle around to get to that point, because I've definitely been there just throwing weight around like probably we all have when we were younger. So, but gotta improve and find ways to make some type of new stimulus. So that's the point that I'm at now.
Hell yeah. I wanna go back into your history a little bit, because this is one of the interesting pieces that I think makes you a great candidate for the huge AF segment, and that's that you've put on a freaking ton of mass. Now, what we had talked about, and also I was looking at your contest history, that you kind of floundered around without having really gotten into incredible shape, and then once you got into really good shape, how much were you weighing on stage at that time?
So, yeah, I floated between kind of middleweight to light heavyweight. And then when I got to what I would say is excellent conditioning, stage ready for sure, was 2015 USA's. I'd sucked down to be a middleweight at 175, which, you know, and we had said previously, like, I was really probably ready about 184 and sucked down.
Yeah.
But then from 2015 USA's to 2016 USA's, I had weighed in at 215. So.
And that's weigh-in. That's state. That's weigh-ins. That's insane, man.
So 175 to 215, which, you know, call it 185 to 215 if you don't want to count how much I sucked down, versus, you know, weighing at 215, you can keep eating all the way up to weigh-ins. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
but regardless, you know, it is what it is. It's a lot of stage weight to put on.
Dude, that's an incredible amount of progress to make. I mean, I feel like guys are doing pretty good if they can gain, like, you know, six pounds between contest seasons. What are we talking there? 30, 40 pounds, huh?
Yeah. It's about 30 pounds, which, it's like even like brand new to training, you know, your first year gains, like maybe, right. Or, your first year using supplementation, even that's hard to do, you know? And so,
yeah.
And I wasn't new to training. I wasn't new to supplementation. It was just the perfect storm and everything came together. Every moment of that whole year, everything was done perfectly. And that's also the first year that I had a coach in prep. Before that, I had just coached myself. So I was working with Matt Jansen. Everyone asked, like, what'd you do? You know, oh, he took like grams of drugs, or he slept next to a nuclear power plant.
One of the two.
yeah, something crazy. But, you know, it's implementing. I think there's a few times when you can do a excellent rebound phase out of a show and get a lot out of it. And people come to me and expect that kind of result.
Huh.
And it's not repeatable every time, you know. For me, it was sucking down way down and, you know, pushing food hard after the show, something I had never done, and keeping supplementation higher. And
you mean post-show, keeping
post-show,
like, not taking everything out, basically?
Right. Just leaving a couple things in.
Okay.
Just for that, like, it was about 8 weeks. Eight weeks after the show, we just kept going, and I had already gotten from that 175 up to about 215. Still very conditioned. Like, still had some faint glute lines in. And
no kidding.
Then it was just being very meticulous the whole time. Like, I was. Whatever Matt told me to do is exactly what I did. I mean, you know, you have off seasons where, like, you know, people are 90%, or, you know, they you get more flexible in off season. That year, there was nothing. It was, I would eat my meals exactly what Matt told me. Matt would have to tell me, like, on those, you know, hey man, you should go harder on your cheat meals because you're staying really lean. Like, oh, okay. You got to tell me to eat more. Then, you know, we had our off season push, and that was productive. And then starting from a leaner state going into the 2016 USA's was helpful, because in 2015, we were kind of chasing fat loss the whole time. So you can't really grow into the show. So then another part, I was starting to grow into the show for 2016. Cause I came down from like 230 to 225. I sat at 225 for like 7 weeks.
Oh man, that's golden when you can make that happen, isn't it?
It's so awesome. You're like, you start just looking at the scale, like, man, what's going on? Am I not getting leaner? But you're just like mutating, you know, at the time.
And that's where pictures and having an eye come in play, right? Because if you just went by the scale, you would have probably pulled more food out, right?
Yeah, and you would have lost that, you know, lost that edge where you're growing at the same time. So from 225, I only came down to 215.
Wow.
And so, I mean, you're talking not a lot of weight drop.
No. Now, when you were down at middleweight and you said you made that big progressive point during that rebound phase, did you guys, now a lot of times, because here's what I'm getting at, a lot of guys now they religiously reverse diet and they calculate small amounts of food and they reverse that back in. But what you were telling me is you did not do that, right? You and Matt just hammered it.
Right. It went pretty high. And I think, and even doing it again from my shows since that point, it's usually like, look at what the meals that you've been doing for, like carving up. And then I would also look at your meals you were doing right before dieting, what was probably pretty close to like your maintenance level.
Okay.
And that's probably a good set point to be at. But usually guys get pretty revved up post-show. So usually those refeed meals, those carb up meals that you're using for right before the show is a pretty good starting point.
Yeah.
And jumping into it too. But, you know, that it just doesn't work the same for everyone. I can't tell everyone just go do that because some people just rapidly put on fat and they're not growing. So sure. I think you might have like one of those chances in your whole career to really rebound like that. And otherwise, I would say reversing would be a good point of really looking at pictures. And, you know, I was getting like terrible lower back pumps. Like I was pretty loaded over and spilled over. And, you know, you could arguably say, you know, that might not be quite as productive in certain instances, just from training, you know, like trying to do deads and squats and stuff. So, but that would be a good starting point, I would say. I usually look at for people trying to rebound, I was looking at their carb intake that we're doing for going into a show.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I wanted to bring that up because I feel like, you know, you're probably right that not everybody can do that and not everybody can do that every time. But hey, be open-minded, right? If you have that as an op, don't just sell yourself short and think that it has to be, you know, that way, that you have to do a slow reverse type thing. Because, man, it sounds like that was a game changer for you. And it makes me think, how important is your level of body fat when you go into a mass gaining phase?
Yeah, it's very important, right? So it's like your starting point. I mean, if you're already starting point's high, yeah, you don't have much room to go to. And also, if you're more depleted from a show, you have more room to go up as well. And I would say, like, you know, another aspect to that, when you're looking at how much I had gained, I will say my supplementation was higher than it probably ever had been.
Okay.
Which, you know, take that for what it's worth, but it made a difference. And there's a couple things I had never used in the off season before too. That would have made a difference too. I don't want to go too far into it, but
sure.
But it wasn't dramatic, you know, it wasn't dramatic. And even so training, that would be the other aspect to look at. What'd you do with training? Was it that different? And I'd always trained really, really hard. I powerlifted for like 8 years. So coming out of that, I learned progressive overload and I learned mentality and what it feels like to truly hit like failure in a movement and just muscular failure. So I always had that moving into bodybuilding and getting into, I kind of went straight into DC training, which had just aligned perfectly with my thought process from powerlifting. So even going through all that, like I'd always trained hard. I remember for that year though, like I had come up with a training plan that I wanted to try. It was like, you know, everyone was saying DUP training. You got to do DUP training. So it was like daily undulating periodization, nothing really groundbreaking. Many people are doing that type of template of workout, but I had like a strength day. So okay. I had one day where I hit four lifts and it would be like 5x5, not failure. Have a day off and I had a push pull legs, which was all 10 rep range. A day off, then I would have push pull legs, all 15 rep range, and shorter rest periods that day. So on all these days, I was hitting different rep ranges. I focused on strength, more muscular endurance, metabolic stress, and still like mechanical loading and muscle damage. And I would just keep rotating through that. And man, I got strong, lifts were really progressing. And even all those days, it was all the same lifts. I didn't have a lot of variation, but it worked until like I got too run down. Mm. So that's always been my problem, is like training probably too much, you know, so.
Okay. Yeah. I think a lot of people who love training, that ends up being what happens, is, you know, you can overdo it, but hey, if you're not pushing up against that limit, then how would you know, really? How would you know that you were doing everything you could?
Yeah. I feel like you gotta reach at some point to really know where you are, rather than under training the whole time. But yeah, I just wanted to go into that piece of it to give people some reference for those conditions that set me up for that. Cause there's just a lot of factors that went into that year that made everything work really, really well. And, especially with Matt, I mean, and a lot of credit to him, because he had the eye and the plan, and I just implemented it like a robot.
That's so awesome, man. It's awesome when you can do that too. And we've had the opportunity to talk with Matt before on the show, and, he has some really cool insights. So it must have been a cool experience. Give us an idea. What did your carb intake look like then, going from middleweight? Because I feel like a lot of guys can relate to that. There's a lot of guys that compete at, say, either middleweight or their classic body, you know, classic physique, that would fit into the middleweight if they were to compete in bodybuilding, and that they would love to do what you did. And obviously, that's not going to necessarily work the same for everyone. But to give them an idea, what was the food intake like?
I mean, when I had sucked down for the show, I think we were probably around 70 grams of carbs. Like, it had to get really, really low, because, you know, I had nearly 10 pounds to try to get down to. And we did most of that just through depleting glycogen. Didn't have to really mess with water too much.
Okay.
So you get the, you know, that's where I'm coming from. That's like my baseline where I'm down in. And I believe I was around 210 grams of rice with about each meal. So looking at about 60 grams of carbs with each meal coming out of my that post show period, which isn't ridiculous, but I was just coming from such a low point.
Yeah.
And that was over six meals.
Okay.
So let's say close to 400 grams of carbs. And that quickly went up. I'm pretty sure I got close to 600-700 grams of carbs in that off season. I have to look back.
Yeah.
You know, we're just looking at Matt's just usually sending me foods. He doesn't send me numbers. And so I'd add them up every now and then. But if just to guess offhand, I'm pretty sure that's what I was up to.
That's pretty cool, man. I think your story is pretty inspirational, like I said, because there's a lot of guys, they're kind of stuck down there. Where are you sitting at now, weight wise?
I'm at 250.
250. And you, I saw you were posting this on your website. What's the URL, by the way?
It's j3sportsrd.com.
Okay. And through that, you've got links, you're doing this through YouTube as well. You're basically breaking down your off season right now.
Yeah, it's what I want to do is just show people like the full journey of it. And I think that's what people really connect with, and they like to see how we're really doing it. And that's even the people that I follow. You know, I'm signed up on Jordan Peters' website, because you follow these guys' journeys and what exactly they're doing it, and the reasons why. And that's always been what I look for, is people explaining the whys behind it, because I want to learn it. And so all those guys were on his site, and you know, I was like, well, I want to share what I'm doing and give back like that, and let people learn, because there's just so much misinformation out there. Yeah, a ton of information. So you need some type of credible source to be able to go to and help filter through it all. And time's so valuable, so you have to pick your people wisely. But I wanted to share that, and just I started with my prep, and people connected with it huge. There had people reaching out to me, like, you know, they wanted me to coach him because of how doing things and what we were doing, and giving the reasons behind those things. And, you know, there are people getting better understanding of it. So I just kept it going. And every week I post up on my blog just what my diet changes are, and give the rationale behind all those changes. And on YouTube too, we're putting up workouts, and I explain through my workouts and give all the whys. And I think that's important now, is to ask yourself, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this barbell row right now? Why is it the second exercise? You know, I don't think a lot of people might have answers to that. It just kind of is what it is, or you're going off feel. So that's what I'm trying to give to people.
Well, that I want to get to training too, because I watched some of your videos, and I do like that you show some training, and then it cuts back to you, from what I've seen, talking about your workouts and stuff, talking about what you were doing at that time. But before we get there, and just one thing I wanted to note here, you know, I'm looking at your current diet right now. So you're a pretty big dude. And just, this is kind of, I guess, for the audience members, the guys that are trying to get the muscle. It looks like you're eating ballpark around, like, you know, six ounces of chicken for most of your meals. It's not like an incredible amount of protein, I guess, is the first thing I'm noticing, right?
Yeah. And I've scaled back a lot. I started doing that in this past prep because I was so hard to drop weight. We got to the sticking point, for the New York Pro. And I was just hovering around like that 220 mark and couldn't break it. It's like, well, man, we're doing a ton of cardio and the, you know, food's low. It's like, obviously I'm holding muscle.
Yeah.
You know? So what makes sense? Let's drop protein and add carbs in. And everything started moving after that. It's like at that point, carbohydrates are more muscle sparing than protein, because you get protein so high, carbs are so low. You're trying to make glucose from your protein. But it's like, hey, just lower protein and add glucose in, and that's what kept me moving. So it's like, man, I think I could get away with less protein. I don't want to say get away with it. I think it's still optimal.
Okay.
But even then, my protein to intake, if you count all like protein from carbohydrate sources, fat sources, et cetera, I'm still around 340 grams of protein.
Okay.
But it's still a good chunk of protein. I mean, it's not that low, but, I mean, but I think relative, yeah, for being, you know, 250 and I'm not too sloppy of a 250. It's a lower protein intake. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I wanted to point that out because you know, I could speak from my own experience. You know, I'm you know, experimenting through my bodybuilding, trying to figure out what works for me. And you know, there's only so many things you can play with your food. And so you get it in your head, hey, maybe I need more protein. And before you know it, you're eating 8 ounces of chicken, then you're eating 10 ounces of chicken. And it's interesting, I think, to share with the audience where you're at right now, because it sounds like you're finding 6 ounces to be kind of a good spot for you. So I think that's good. Yeah. Looks like carbs now. That's where you really push things, it looks like.
Yeah. I'm definitely higher in carbohydrates, and I'm getting close to 700 grams right now. And fats are just more moderate. They're around 70 grams of fat.
Okay.
And I think just pushing carbohydrates right now in the off season till, you know, I get to a point where the volume's so high, I have to add in more caloric density through fats.
Okay.
But, you know, I think there is points to move protein up and drop it down too, because it's more than just muscle building too. It's satiety on a diet. You know, there's a thermic effect of food to consider when you're dieting as well, if you're transitioning, moving foods around. But that's my whole background is nutrition. I have my master's in nutrition. I'm a dietitian, but.
Oh, no kidding. Where'd you go?
I'm here in San Antonio, Texas. We have Incarnate Word. That was the only school here that had a dietetics program. So.
No kidding. How long did that take?
For me, it took forever because I did my bachelor's in exercise science.
Okay.
And then I'm like, well, come out of that degree, it's like, well, what can you do? I could be a personal trainer or coach. I could have done this without a degree. So I went for nutrition, and since I didn't have all those prerequisites to get my RD, I had to do a lot of those and my master's at the same time. So it ended up taking me 3 years of schoolwork, then 1 year of an internship, which was like 1,200 hours. So okay. I was on the four-year plan. Yeah. When normally it's like a bachelor's degree to get your RD.
Hey man, listen, you got it, and that's all that really matters, right?
That's right, man. Definitely.
That's badass.
But I love school. I could have stayed in school forever.
You ever think about going back at all?
Oh yeah, yeah. I was just looking at an online PhD program through Concordia in Chicago for exercise science. But I'm like, wait, what else could I do with that? Like, I don't want to really go researcher. I don't want to go teach. I just like coaching people. So I don't know if that cost to benefit ratio would work out right now.
Yeah,
so,
that makes total sense, man.
That's kind of on the it's almost on the bucket list. Like, you know, like you want to go to the highest, like whatever you do, you want to go to the highest level. You know, like, hey, PhD, you can't go any higher than that. Or like pro card, you can't go any higher than that. I just want to want to have it, but at least for now, no.
Now I, you know, you mentioned Jordan a little bit ago. He had said like the deeper he's gotten into his education, the less it actually applies to the real world. Do you feel that the education you had is still applicable to the work you do as a coach now?
Some of it, you definitely get the basics down and the understanding of like basic metabolism and what makes sense, right? So you could look at some, you know, whatever you would call it, bodybuilding dogma, bro science, and you have that knowledge set to be able to see, does this even make sense metabolically, and analyze it. You also have the ability to, you know where to find credible information, know how to look through studies. So I think that's the tools you can really gain from that type of education. So I think that was, but I could definitely see like moving on to like a PhD. I mean, the whole thing about a PhD is you're starting to explore the unknown. And in that, it's very specific, and it's going to be hard to apply to coaching, right? So you're going kind of study from study and you know, learning in your area. So yeah, I don't know how much more you could really gain. I feel like in the master's is when you really are learning more about how, like in your bachelor's, this is what someone told me, and what professor, like in your bachelor's, we teach you enough to think you know something, right?
Okay.
In your master's, we teach you everything that we don't know. So, right. So, and then in your PhD, you go explore the unknown.
Huh. I like that.
So I think, yeah, with going through the master's, like you're able to break down information well, but I don't know about going on if it really would apply that much. So I would have to say I agree with Jordan there.
We should get you on with Dr. Scott Stevenson for Muscle Minds. I have a feeling you two could probably nerd out about science for a long time on that.
Oh man, that would just be overwhelming. he's on another wavelength level, you know.
He is, yeah. But he somehow, you know what, he's done a good job at like still connecting it back to the real world, you know.
Oh, he definitely can. He would be, he's an excellent teacher, obviously. I mean, he can relay very complicated information, to even layman's terms if he needs to.
Yeah.
I think that makes an excellent teacher, and that's what he is. So
back to bro stuff here. I'm looking at your carb sources. You got a lot of rice going on, you know, more complex carbs. I see you include fruits too. Tell me about, what's up with, doing stuff like mango and papaya.
Well, at least for off season, it's definitely a time where you can incorporate your food preferences.
Okay.
And I feel like with bodybuilding, we can get stuck in the rut of like, do you have to eat brown rice and broccoli or, but I don't really think that's the case. And I don't think it's supported with our studies either. And there's nothing wrong with fruit. I think a lot of the issues with fructose, people are looking at high fructose corn syrup, but, fruit has so many health benefits and micronutrients that we can gain from it. So I think having incorporating off season is great. I mean, at least with mango, it's just a fruit that I like. And I do papaya and pineapple. And I mean, you could say like, oh, there's bromelain and the pain and the protein enzymes. I mean, honestly, I just like those foods.
Fair enough.
That there is, benefit that I could argue, like, yeah, I eat pineapple with my beef because of the protein enzymes to help it digest better. Like, sure, if you want to make it sound like I'm really smart and complicated, you can, but it's just because I like mixing it together. I think that's important for a complete diet is you do have variety in a diet, so where you get a variety of foods that give you all those macronutrients important, but of course all your micronutrients as well. So a diet probably isn't built very well if it's not providing with all the varieties of multivitamins. So I think, yeah, trying to get some variety of vegetables and fruits, it is important. But you have to keep in mind digestion as well. So like I do have a lot of rice as my carb sources.
Okay.
Cause a lot of stuff just starts getting, the volume starts being an issue. Like with potatoes, I start getting bloated over 200 grams. Too many like wheat products start giving me issues just because it's just takes longer to digest. So I think that's really, really important off season, looking at your digestibility and what that person can handle and making sure you're not getting really distended, you know, having to feel like you're force feeding food all down. I think that's one of the biggest issues with having these, waist expanding is you're sitting around all day long the off season with your waist distended from eating just high food volumes that aren't digesting well. So
that's a huge topic, man. And you know, for the size that you're putting on too, that's one of the things I noticed in your, because you, along with your nutrition, along with these videos, you're also posting progress pics on your site too. So I can see, man, you're still, you're keeping your waist in, you know, pretty tight there. Has that ever been a problem for you dealing with distension while you've been trying to gain size?
Never a huge issue. I will say, like, when I powerlifted, I pushed my weight up pretty high with no regard for how I looked, you know, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
And so my waist definitely pushed out bigger. Maybe it's, I feel like maybe it could have been different if I did in for bodybuilding. If I had not done that, maybe my waist would still be smaller, tighter now. I don't know. I can't really say, but I haven't had an issue. Even the year when I jumped from middleweight to heavyweight, that was pretty fast weight gain. My waist did increase, but not to, I think the V taper still benefited.
Yeah. Okay? I mean, like, no matter what, if you're going to get bigger everywhere, that includes your waist. So, I mean, it's going to grow to some extent, you know, if you're putting on that much weight. One more thing I wanted to ask you about the plan that I'm looking at your nutrition here, is just your pre and intro workout. I noticed, you've got Alpha GPZ in there. What are your thoughts on it?
You know, I played around with it for a little bit, and cause I'm trying not to use a ton of stimulant in the off season just to save those kind of tools for prep.
Okay.
But I do notice a good, it's hard to describe, just like a mental kind of focus.
Yes.
With it, that I almost don't need much stimulant.
Huh.
And so this is actually my first off season really using it. So I'm still trying to play around and see what I really think about it. So,
yeah.
But so far I really like it. And, about 900 milligrams is what I'm doing. So I've seen some people using less, but, for me, that seems to be about the sweet spot of what I've most, okay, a good effect from.
Interesting. Yeah, I was wondering. I'm really into nootropics. It's such a fascinating topic in supplements. It's different. I guess that's part of it, is that, you know, we can only talk so much about, like, pre workouts, intra workouts, and stuff. But nootropics are something that's kind of like new and hot on the market, and there's so many of them, I think, that do cool things. So I definitely wanted to ask you about that. So you're not using like a some type of like a prefabbed pre-workout then. I see you've got the Alpha GPC, you've got citrulline, you put some Hydromax, some EAA, some creatine. You also include a little bit of salt, actually a decent amount, 2 grams of salt. So that's your pre/intra workout, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. And so just, it's hard to find you know, and they are coming out. I think companies are coming out with like clinically dosed products now.
Okay.
But that's how I started a while back, is just getting my powders and just making my own thing so I can make sure I get, you know, clinically dosed stuff that's shown in the research and to really work, and not getting a thing that's just an underdosed formula concoction. So,
well, and if you're trying to limit stims, I mean, you're not going to really find too many. Well, there are a few like just pump products, but yeah, I haven't seen many pre-workouts that don't have caffeine in it. Do you use caffeine, or is that something that it just doesn't happen to be in this?
I will on occasion, okay, if I really feel like I need it, and I'm sponsored by Animal, so I have a stockpile of Animal Fury.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So man, and that's like 350 milligrams of caffeine. So if I can do like half a pack if I need it, or a full pack if I really want to crank out. But like on leg days and stuff, I won't do any caffeine because I feel like I'm trying to catch my breath the whole time. So, if I can limit my caffeine, I will.
Okay, cool. I think these things are all good to know. So I want to get to training, but before I do, I want to ask you, as far as nutrition goes, what do you think are some of the mistakes that guys make when they're trying to grow? Because I feel like a lot of us, we end up doing everything except for what works first until we finally figure out, you know, how to get there. Are there any mistakes that you've seen guys make, or mistakes that you've made yourself that you would suggest we try to avoid, you know, pitfalls we try to not have to fall into?
Well, definitely like those first 3 years I competed, I just coached myself. And okay, coaching yourself, you're basically reinventing the wheel, right? No one's showing you the way. You're just reading and trying to see what works. And I definitely made lots of mistakes within that. And one year I I got way too fat. And I think it was, you know, what's important is definitely having ways to monitor your progress and be as analytical as you can with it, but also looking at your subjective measures as well. So for one, that year I wasn't tracking pictures. I would just kind of look at the scale and was just chasing the scale weight. So I think if taking like full measurements, it would be important, like actually tracking my waist, like what is my waist doing? Like who cares if my legs grow a half an inch, if my waist just increased 2 inches.
Good point. I never do that too. It's a simple, easy tool to incorporate.
I did it when I was younger. I started doing it again. I track all my measurements now. And then I track my caliper measurements too.
Okay.
And not to have like from an accuracy standpoint, like, all right, I'm 8% body fat, but just to have like a skinfold measure, something repeatable, you know, that I can do. So knowing like what some millimeter sights are, just to put that in reference to my measurement increase, right? So if my thigh went up an inch, my caliper, my thigh didn't increase, then, well, it's maybe kind of indicative that I put some muscle tissue on.
Okay. Yeah.
And then you're tracking your lifts too, right? So then your leg strength's increasing. So you put all those things together, like, all right, I'll probably put some lean tissue on, you know? So I think having some good measurements and multiple tools to use throughout your off season to really gauge progress. Otherwise, I think guys might just go off the scale. But with that being said, like going off the scale, the mistake I made was pushing food too hard, too fast. And if I didn't see the scale increase, I would just push it again.
Okay.
And I think what you need to do is just make a change and just trust it and let it ride out for a little bit and then look at all these different measurements that you're taking and try to paint a picture of what's really going on in your body. But we should always be going off pictures. And then the other point is guys trying to stay too lean the off season. And I've done that too. So and just not making enough. You have the body fat, you know, you have to let it get up to a certain level that you're able to grow. And that's going to be different for everyone, kind of your set point, whatever that may be, to where it is optimal and you can eat enough to grow. Otherwise, you're just in too much of a deficit trying to do it. But
do you have an idea what that percentage is for you?
Right. I feel like right now it's a pretty good point for me, which I had a DEXA scan done and it said I was like 8% body fat, which I don't know. I don't, you know, there's some error within that, but maybe I would say if I had a look at I would say maybe 10 or 11%, but somewhere in there. I know I have visible abs and all quad lines in. I can see my serratus. So if you're looking at my pictures, that's kind of the key points that I can see in myself, you know.
Okay.
I just feel like if you don't have abs in the off season, like, I don't know, that's getting up there in body fat. Like, I don't know if that's productive for anyone, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. How often would you recommend guys took pictures to catalog all this?
In the off season, you could probably get away doing it every 2 weeks, but I do it every week.
Okay.
Honestly, and it's hard to see changes in the off season because they don't come like when you're on prep and fat's dropping off. So you can't just say like, oh, I'm not seeing any change in a week and, you know, make an adjustment. So I think that's why all those other measurements are important, like your body fat, your circumference measures, and then definitely we're going to get into training, I know, but logging your workouts, because if your strength is progressing, that should over time be translating to more tissue. So I think that's a huge point in the off season, because I have a lot of people that are trying to track these variables and look at their pictures and not see change. It's like, well, hey, if these lifts are progressing, we just need to kind of trust that that's going to carry over to tissue over time. But I think, you know, if you do this, like look back in a month at your pictures, you know, and see if those areas are improving, see if you can see visible change and see if the measurements on the areas that you're trying to bring up are actually growing. And if not, or, you know, evaluate what you're doing and come up with a new plan.
Gotcha. So it sounds like you're taking notes on everything. You're taking notes on your progress in the gym. You're taking notes on your progress in muscle and body fat changes, and you're taking you're cataloging your diet along the way. Here it sounds like you have just basically everything is kind of cataloged out.
It is, you
that's
know,
cool. It sounds organized.
I feel like a lot of us are like that these kind of type A OCD bodybuilders, right?
And yeah, not bad.
I enjoy it. You know, I enjoy seeing it. But at this point, I'm coaching myself now, so I just have to. I want all these things that I can look at and get the full picture. I have you, my clients, I have them doing it too, because I don't want to miss anything on them. And if this is how I'm doing it, well, I should be doing it that way for them too.
That makes sense, man. So you going back then, you had competed as a middleweight, we talked about, and then you had made some incredible changes when moved up to light heavy and heavyweight. Now, you turned pro at USA's in 2016, am I correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, you were heavyweight there, and then you came back 2018 to start competing at Dallas Europa and the New York Pro. What is your training like now compared to 2016?
To be honest, not much has really changed as far as my split that I do. I always end up going back to some type of push pull legs,
okay,
type of split. The thing now is I feel like my volume has come down a lot too. And I've just gotten smarter with understanding my recovery ability and when I actually do need to add in more rest days or take away rest days. And I think that's the biggest thing, because right now I do push-pull legs, but I train 2 days on, 1 day off. So those days are always like rotating, you know, push-pull off, legs push off, and so on. But as – and, you know, even progressing over time, even my like set execution has become more intense. So those same sets that I probably did back then – I can put a lot more into now and exert a lot more tension in my tendon muscles. So it's a much more productive set now.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
That volume has dropped back too from that point. Which I know a lot of guys like, yeah, progressive overload, you're going to use more volume over time, which like, yeah, weight's gone up. So that equates into volume.
Okay.
But sets have come down just because the execution is so much better.
No. Something I think is like a little bit deceptive here to me is that you're like a really cool laid back sounding dude on the radio, but I suggest everybody goes to check out your YouTube page and look at some of your training, because your intensity is very high. You are very focused. This is something that, you know, we had Dusty on not too long ago to talk about his thoughts on intensity. Can you explain what intensity is to us? Because you're brutal. You are. You're absolutely brutal in the gym.
Yeah. And like for powerlifting for as long as I did and the environment that I did, it was an intense environment to train in. You know, I started off with some older guys that had all these world records. So I was always trying to like really, you know, catch up to these guys. Then in college, I trained on in this college university, we had a powerlifting team. And
you guys you're in Texas, which is that's like the heart of powerlifting, basically.
There is a lot of powerlifting down here. We train on like a back porch, enclosed porch, like 20 by 30 with those huge like box speakers just blare. it was so intense.
In Texas, that had to be hot.
Yeah, it's hot. but you know, that all carried over to what I do now. And I think that's where I learned it, you know, what it feels to fail, you know, get under a weight that's just crushing and just grind and grind and grind and not give up until the weight just drives you down, no matter what you're trying to do. So I don't know if anyone, like a lot of people have that experience and they just start lifting and no one takes them to that place, or if it's just something innate in people that are just kind of have that killer instinct to just keep pushing. And I think it is. I think there's stuff, something in people that's not everyone that can push that hard. 'Cause I've trained with guys that they just don't have it. You know, they don't have something in them that keeps them pushing. But definitely for, you know, intensity, it's a mentality that I think you have to have it in you, but it also develops over time. And I was listening to Dusty, and he put it in a good term. Like, you reach you reach a peak in intensity that you didn't know before and you could have never seen. And then you kind of see this other peak that might be possible. Right.
Yeah.
And so that's a great way to illustrate that. Cause over the years, and what I was saying is like, you hit this new set of intensity that you've never experienced. You're like, holy shit, I didn't think I could do that X rep or feel that much contraction in a muscle. And you just recreate that. Now that's the norm. So, well, shit, what do I do now? It's just keep going to this next level.
Well, no wonder you're almost overtraining at times. You know, if you're walking in the gym with that's it's hard, man. It's hard to bring that, you know, game after game, day after day.
Yeah, most people don't want to do it because it's daunting, but at the same time, it's why I love training, and that thought of trying to like beat myself and better myself. It's what has keeps driving me. I guess that's why I have made a lot of progress. And I truly think like training is the biggest tool that we have. Like it's not drugs, it's not nutrition. Training is what pulls the trigger on all the stimulus for whether you're going to be adding muscle or dropping body fat or whatever that may be, and everything else, potentiates that.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, that's what everybody has said so far with this segment. And it makes sense because, I mean, realistically, like if we went back to the basis, if you take training out of the equation, then nothing happens, right? You can take the drugs, nothing. You can eat the food, nothing, you know? You got to have the training, man. What's your favorite body part? Well, I know you do a push-pull leg, so I should say, what's your favorite workout? Which do you get the most out of or connect to the most?
For my leg days, I have like a quad emphasis and a ham emphasis. Definitely my quad emphasis day.
Yeah,
it's my favorite movement. Quads is definitely a stronger point, so that's probably why it's also my favorite. It's also the most challenging day from a mental perspective. And you know, it's like I still every time I'm like nervous going in the gym of what I know I have to do and what the numbers that I know I have to hit and beat. But I love it. So legs is definitely my favorite day. And then probably my pull day, back day, then push day would be my last day.
I'd fall in that order too. That's the way I'd go. You're talking about that nervousness to go in there because you know what you're about to do on a quad day. Do you wake up in the morning on leg day thinking about that? Like, oh, I know I'm going to be doing that today.
Sometimes, and like I just trained with a buddy, and because you know he wanted to see like kind of what intensity, what you need to be at. Yeah. I have a lot of guys that come train me that have no idea like where they need to be at, and then they're like, oh, this is it. You know, you realize that next mountain peak, right? So absolutely, just training with this other buddy the other day, I'm going in like, all right, he wants to see intensity, so I'm gonna have to bring this. I know what I gotta do, and it is a little nerve wracking, kind of all day leading up to it. But
I've heard guys that'll they think about it. They think about what they're going to be doing. Obviously, you're a guy who has a plan before you even walk in the gym. You know how you're going to organize your lifts just based off of everything else you've told me. Well, and the fact that I did watch your video, your most recent quad video, organize everything. What's your mindset about how you want to go about training quads?
Well, you know, I have people ask me these type of questions are like, you know, John, how do you bring up your biceps? And I think with anything you need to like first look at the big picture and set back for the whole, and that should go into like your almost your whole year of training, because it's really like the it's not a workout. A workout elicits growth, but it's the program, you know, and how that program progresses is what really is going to make what you change. And I think that's how I try to structure things over weeks, having kind of macro cycles and increases in volume and decreases in volume. So that step back look is important, but at least if we are getting down to like one workout structured, I'm usually always hitting like two compound lifts that I know can load the muscle in a different pattern, which a lot of that comes down to just what I can feel the best with. So I did have like some rotations of using like the super squat machine and the hack squat. Those were always my first lifts, one or the other. And I was, man, one day I was just thinking about like the super squat's never my favorite day. And I feel limited range of motion. And so it's like, you know what, fuck it. I'm pulling out this. I'm only going to hack squat. So now one of my quad day, all I do is I just go to hack squat. And then I like a leg press movement next, which we have a pendulum leg press.
I watched that today, man. Those are the way that that pendulum leg press puts pressure in the quad specifically is really unique.
It is. And we have another, a 40 degree leg press. I won't even use it because that pendulum loads the muscle so much more. And the way it arches up and the lever arm increases as you're going out. So it actually, you get more loading as the muscle is shortened.
I never thought of that.
Which a normal leg press, you don't. You get a better, you get more mechanical advantage towards the top, so you actually have less loading. Though this one, you get like this, it's almost having like a band attached. It's like a constant tension throughout. So that's something I considered when like, you know, picking my leg press movement. And that's why I select that one. And so moving on, those are my two main movements. I'm shooting for heavy loading.
You can't get as many plates on those, the pendulum leg press. That's what I've noticed.
You don't need to, though.
Yeah.
You know, you see guys like, you know, leg pressing like 1,000 pounds with little legs. It's like, what? Rethink this. Or you know, what's it called? Squat press. It's Cybex, you know, and the way the weight is loaded, it has a ton of mechanical advantage of using it. So you can load the hell out of it. Same with the super squat machine, you know, facing the machine.
Oh, yeah.
And it's built like a wheelbarrow. I don't know if you ever really looked at it like that, but you have the pads where you put your shoulders. That's kind of like the wheelbarrow handles.
Okay.
And then you have weight, and then you have the pivot arm, which why do we use the wheelbarrows? Because we have like a ton of mechanical advantage to haul weight around.
Yeah.
So that loading, how it is, you can put a ton of weight on there, which, man, loading weight sucks, but that's why you see these guys using a ton of weight. And the way the machine arches down, you end up viewing almost like a good morning doing
yeah,
it. So
yeah.
It's not the best loading for legs. It loads the lower back a lot. So these are the kind of stuff that I like think through when I'm like picking my exercises and thinking about loading and how machines are built. And
that's fascinating.
You know, I think,
man,
that's really, really important in selecting your moves, because you only have so many movements that you can pick in a day. So you have to first start off with the best moves that you can to load the muscle efficiently.
Between that and your hack squat, you know, both of those things, the pendulum leg press and that hack squat, they're two machines that you can't load a ton of plates on those things the way you could on certain other exercises, like the ones you just mentioned. I feel like for a lot of us, it would be easy to shy away from those things for that reason. You know, stroke the ego, let's load a ton of plates on there. But you're saying, what's harder? What's actually going to be more difficult to do is what it comes down to.
That's what we're trying to do in bodybuilding, is find like the hardest way. Well, I think you should be finding the hardest way to do something. And it's usually what's going to load the muscle the most too. But anyway, after my, like those compound lifts, I move on to some type of unilateral movement that's not really focused on hitting failure, more volume work. Cause that's another mistake I made in the past of trying to do like failure sets on split squats. And I tore my rec fem doing it. So
your tore your what?
My rec fem, my rectus femoris.
What's that? Quad. Okay. In the which muscle is that?
It's that middle muscle of your quad, which, you know, separates the quad sweep from your teardrop. And I tore that one doing like a Bulgarian split squat.
Oh god.
And
did you have to have that repaired or anything, or was it just a minor? Okay.
No, it was like a partial tear.
Okay.
It still has a little knot in it, and it does look different, but functionally it's fine now. Okay. But I definitely keep those movements in to build strength in those lengthened areas where I probably didn't have it before, and I was just using probably too much weight for that movement. You know, I don't think it's meant to, like, it's like doing max effort lunges, you know.
Okay.
Just the stability of a lunge and being in that position is vulnerable. So I keep those movements in it and just use it more of a a volume aspect. And then at the very, very end is when I start putting in my like isolation work and go working in a higher rep range and trying to get that like pump as much as I possibly can and build a lot of metabolic stress in.
Can you tell me a little bit about what you have to do? So you're starting out with the heaviest stuff, the hardest stuff then. How long does it take you to warm up with something for something like that?
Like for that hack squat you saw, like I'm pretty close to about 8 plates on the hack squat.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
I just do 2 plate jumps. So I do 1 plate, 3 plate, 5 plate, 7 plate, and then whatever that work set is for the day. So about 4 warm ups. And then after that, definitely my warm up sets drop off.
Okay.
From there. So I go to the pendulum leg press. I can usually do 1 or 2 kind of feeder sets and then jump right in to a work set. Then like once I get to my split squats, I can just jump right into those. I don't need to warm up any long because I'm already pretty damn warm, right?
Yeah.
So that's the progression there. But overall, my volumes, it is really low. So that leg day that you looked at, I had about 8. No, it was probably 9 work sets.
Okay.
For quads, which is not a lot.
Yeah.
You know, for what some guys are doing, and I think it's important to say, like, when you read some workouts and you say squats 4 sets of 10. That doesn't mean they did 4 failure sets of 10. It usually means they're counting their warm ups and they did 1 set. The last one was maybe pretty close to failure. So when I'm counting my work sets, it's just which ones I'm really going all out on.
So if you're doing, several warm ups, maybe 4 warm ups on that hack squat, how many reps are you getting during those warm ups?
So I taper down as I'm going. So usually the first one will be like 12 to 15. And then 10, then 8, then like 5 or 6. And then I hit my weight that I'm trying to go all out on. And typically how my normal workouts are all set up is usually I'm hitting something like 8 to 12 reps on the first set. And I back off and hit something like 15 to 20.
Okay.
And that's a very similar pattern that I use in all my movements. So I'm trying to get strong in a variety of rep ranges.
Okay.
Because I think there are benefits to both.
So when you get up to that first very heavy working set from the 4 warm-ups you did, what kind of time frame are we talking there?
I'm just taking about 2 minutes between.
So you're in the gym, and 10 minutes later, you're able to go hard, basically.
Yeah.
Bam,
yeah.
Damn. That's something I can't do. I'm also a little bit older now, but it takes me a long time. It takes me a long time to warm up. I know Jordan's the same way. Jordan will get in and he'll put, like, from what I've seen, 225 in the bar and start squatting. And that's his that's his starting warm up. And then goes to the actual set. It's like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's going to be different for everybody.
Yeah,
I think I was listening to Scott Stevenson. I don't know if it was on here about warm ups. And there wasn't really, like, in the literature, like, it just, you don't have, you're not really provided, like, a good, like, what's really required out of a warm up. It's just kind of what's personal to that person, individual to that person.
Yeah.
It's still like, if you're lifting, it's still 225 on the bar. You need to be respectful of that.
You know? Yeah. And
I think that's when it's easier to get injured when you're like, oh yeah, I squat 800. It's like, it's only 200 pounds. And then that's like the one that injures you. Right.
Yeah.
So you still have to be respectful of that weight and take every rep, be very intentional. So all those reps are very, very slow and controlled. And that's one thing I've definitely, and like you saw me over in Pittsburgh, like all my eccentrics are like a 4-second count.
Oh yeah.
And keeping tension on that muscle and not just dropping down and using a lot of stretch reflex out of it, especially back. See it all the time. People training back, just weights just slinging up there. Then they pull it down, which you lose a lot of tension.
Yeah, that was funny, man, because that's exactly what I noticed out of you. I remembered where you were at. So when I jumped on the machine, I moved the weight, and then you were up like, I think it was like 4 plates heavier than me. So I moved it back up to 4 plates, and I'm thinking, wow, that was really heavy for me. Let's see how this guy handles that. And you just kept that perfect form, very slow negatives, and then a controlled aggressive drive up. It was, I was like, yeah, it's funny because I didn't even know who you were at the time. And it was, how many times have I worked in with somebody before then and since then? But I specifically remember that. I was like, huh,
I know.
This guy knows what he's doing here.
Yeah. And, you know, I really like Ben Pakulski's stuff because of that and everything he's teaching about, you know, initiating movements with the muscle and be, you know, developing a stable base to move a weight. And, you know, that's huge. That's so, so important. And using your intended muscles, that's what we're trying to do in bodybuilding. And, but at the same, on the other side of it, right, is the intensity aspect. So you have other guys that I think are overanalyzing the execution and never get to that intensity point where you're really like going all out. You know, I'm thinking like a Branch Warren versus, you know, this like form guru, right? But I mean, I think it's that middle ground. Like you need to learn the execution and then from there start progressing up in intensity.
Right on. And so besides your online coaching, you also do personal training in the gym. Tell me a little bit about what you see in people that what are they doing that could be improved besides this stuff? Because I think we've covered a few things, you know. I think the first important thing that you mentioned was, you know, to try to make the weight hard, basically. You know, don't look for those machines that are going to give you all sorts of advantages. What are some other thoughts, you know, things that you see people that they might even be overlooking? Because I feel like that thing right there, that's something we can overlook. It's just like, well, that machine feels good to me and I can lift a lot of weight with it. It would be easy for us to maybe not face some of these realities of what we should be doing.
Yeah, I don't train many. I just mainly do this online thing now, but okay. I mean, it's still, you know, I still see a lot of stuff done wrong, but, I mean, it sounds basic, but just people, and it's not just executing stuff. This is like, people just don't have a plan. and that's huge. And it just seems more prevalent in bodybuilding because coming from powerlifting, we always followed a program. I follow a lot of, Louis Simmons, West Side Barbell, you know, conjugated method. And we always had this very planned out, you know, we're increasing loads and then you get to bodybuilding. It's like, oh yeah, I'm just, you know, how's it feel today? I'm going off the pump and moving around. It's like, how do we come from this, like, you know, planned out strength based, this is what the evidence is kind of saying too. You need to have these things in your program to, and then nothing's applied and carried over to bodybuilding. So I think just having a plan of some sort that isn't, you know, based in, it needs to be based in something is very, very important. Okay. I still see a lot of guys that look more beginner to intermediate doing these like single body part splits when I really think they need to be doing, as a beginner, I would almost say do full body workouts like 3 times a week and then progress to like an upper lower split as you need more volume, and then going to like a push pull legs as like your days, you know, eventually that upper body day doing chest and back and shoulder, it's going to get too big.
Yeah.
So you have to split it to have that much volume. So then push pull legs. Then I think once you get to the very utmost advanced levels, when you're really going to start, you know, hitting, you know, weak body parts and, throughout that you can be, but I'm saying like really getting specific on it.
Yeah.
I think people are trying to hit specifics when they're already just small. Like I have guys like, I need to bring my arms up. Like, dude, you're like 160 pounds.
Yeah.
You just need to bring your whole body up, you know? So
yeah, I'm still trying to advance to beyond that. I feel like I'm still trying to get beyond that. I still just need to keep growing. That's always been, you know, it takes you a long time. I think you have to reach, you know, like the level you have before, like actually focusing on like, let's work on biceps, you know, until then, I think you can still use everything.
Yeah. You know, if you have like, that's almost my pet peeve for a lot of things is people with arm days. I think Jordan's the same way. It's like, man, one day dedicated to arms when you could be dedicating a day to like some compound moves to get some more overall growth out of it, which you're going to have extra arm stimulus in there as well. So yeah, I think, just smarter planning and getting down to more basics probably, it would be huge.
I think that, yeah, those are some really good points. Anything else that we should cover here? Anything we should mention that we haven't? Because we've talked pretty in depth about training. You know, we talked about what you've done for nutrition, as well as kind of giving people some just basic ideas on what they can do. Is there anything that we're missing here? We haven't talked a lot about the drugs, but we're not really going to go there for this. Is there anything that you can think of we haven't covered? I can't think of anything, but I wanted to ask you.
I know we hit a lot, and I mean, a lot of people, you know, the interest is in drugs, right? But like we said before, it's like, honestly, my big thing is training, because I think you can get so much out of that in nutrition.
Yeah.
And the drugs are just aids on top of that. The other thing is really analyzing your recovery from that aspect. Because I, with the people I coach, I give these people, like, you know, thought out plans, and when I implement them, it's like, man, this looks like chaos. Like, what the hell is going on here? it's being able to analyze, like, are you doing too much? Because I had a great example. I have one client, and I got him up really big in the off season, up to like 270. And we ended up coming down to like 215. Okay. I'm like, Jesus, like what happened? You know, like, this guy trains like an animal and super strong. I know he doesn't deviate. He does exactly what I say. Yeah. And I finally saw him in person. We had a conversation. I just realized, like, he was just not recovering. He works these crazy shifts that are really stressful, and very poor sleep. It ended up like having like sleep apnea, and his recovery wasn't there. Which, say he didn't have that job, he had good sleep, he could have probably handled that training volume, but he didn't know to even be able to bring that, because he's just something, you know, you're just that machine, right? You're like, no, I'll just tough through it. I don't need to say anything, just the way it needs to be. So I think really assessing your recovery is very, very important if you are trying to get big. And you don't have to train every single day. There's a lot of guys that train 3 to 4 days a week and build incredible physiques, but you need those rest days, and you need to try to manage other aspects in your life, whether that be relationships. I mean, obviously we have to make money and have jobs to bodybuild, but if you're in some job that you hate and it's just that much stress on your body and taking your health, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's time to reconsider doing something else or find a way to move on past that. But I think all that stuff's really important. And looking at your sleep, I started looking at heart rate variability, because that's an interesting aspect. I think it's a lot of people looked at it like endurance training, but it's good to have lots of heart rate variability. It shows better working parasympathetic nervous system.
Really?
Which, if you have more like sympathetic nervous system working, you have less heart rate variability. You're not able to adapt as easily. Okay. So as you're becoming more overtrained or stress, any type of stress in the body, whether it is physical or mental, whatever that may be, heart rate variability starts decreasing. And I had one girl that we tracked it over a prep, and it just decreases throughout prep.
Really?
Which it might be something to look at, and something more objective to look at as the time in off season, like, hey, maybe it looks like I'm starting to get overtrained. Let me take a deload week. And that's a whole other topic we didn't really talk about, is taking deloads, because that's not really done much in bodybuilding either. But another recovery aspect, another tool that you can use.
Well, let me ask you this then. And this would set us up for the deload is, you know, because you mentioned the recovery thing. And before that, when I was looking at your website, under your services, one of the things you mentioned under weight training is, you said customized weight training plan based on goals, weak areas, injuries. And then this is what caught me, and recovery ability. How can we assess what our recovery ability is?
Well, with anyone that's coming to me, I have to look at kind of what they're currently doing.
Okay.
Then also, like, you know, I have to look at it like, okay, what does 4 sets of 10 mean, right? We already talked about that, and how hard they're really training.
Okay.
And it's so individualized. Honestly, I just have to kind of work with someone to really say, but I think good tools to look at is like, look at someone's resting heart rate. If that's been changing over time, ask them, you know, look at your sleep. Do you feel like you're getting quality sleep? Are you waking up frequently? Do you feel exhausted throughout the day? Do you feel like you want to take naps all day? How's your energy feel? How's your libido feel?
So like those are things. Those are things that are going to go down if you're not recovering, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay. So if you're not recovering, those would be going down. So you kind of have, like, at least for someone coming into it, you kind of have to start them on something and see. But I think we do have a good idea in research about, you know, what's kind of optimal for volume. And I think somewhere between 10 to 20 sets for a muscle group within a week is about what the research has shown. And you got to take that with, you know, for what it's worth, because, you know, in these studies, what is a trained individual and what is someone training to failure, right? You know, it's obviously, it's not me in a research study and going like balls out on a failure set. So,
right.
But I think that gives us some generalities to apply to people and to know if maybe they're going to be doing too much volume or too little. So, but even now I've kind of fall within that, you know, that 10 to 20 sets for muscle group. I'm doing, you know, 9 sets on a quad day. Some of those movements carry over to hamstrings, right?
Okay.
And so then on my hamstring day, some of those movements carry over to quads. So I'm kind of within that range. I think from there, it is kind of going off your feel and what you're capable of. And I'll personally for me, maybe that will help people too, is if I'm like in off season and I'm pushing supplementation, you know, drugs and have increased recovery capability, I could train like 3 days on, 1 day off.
Okay.
So I can just take off a rest day. That increases training frequency, which also increases my training volume for the week. If I'm dropping back to like an HRT type dosage, I would drop back volume, which I would do that by adding in a rest day, doing 2 days on, 1 day off. Because what I have seen a lot of these studies is you can decrease volume by up to like 2/3. As long as you maintain intensity, you can easily maintain muscle mass, even in the calorie deficit. So volume is the first thing to drop off if you're not recovering, so you can maintain that intensity.
So you don't lift less heavy, basically.
No, okay. Absolutely. And so that transitions into our talk on deloads, is implementing a deload. Like, there's different ways to do it. You know, you're going to take a whole week off, or you're just going to do less sets, or you're going to have more rest days. So what I like to do is just to have more rest days. So with my push pull leg split, I'll do push pull legs just within like a 10-day period. So I'll only train 3 days within those 10 days. So I have just a bunch of rest days. So my volume is decreased within that 10-day period. And I just kind of assess it at the end of that. Like, hey, do I feel fresh? Do I feel motivated to go into the gym? Has sleep quality improved? Like, do I feel more energetic? You know, when you're like, feel fully refreshed, like, man, I can't wait to get back in the gym and kill it. That's kind of how you need to feel at the end of your deload. And if you don't, we'll just extend it a little bit.
Okay.
Going a little longer. And that's even with someone's prep, because that's like, how do you train off season versus how do you train moving into prep? And I'm sure like the listeners have heard this before, like, you know, what you did to put on muscle is what you should be doing to try to keep muscle while you're prepping. But it is very hard to like be increasing training volume while you're dieting, because drugs are increasing. So you are increasing recovery in a sense, but also food's decreasing. So you might be just evened out there, but you could still, like, what I do when I'm dieting, if I start seeing strength start drop, I'll drop off some type of volume aspect, which usually for me, it's like taking out some rest pause sets and going to straight sets, or taking out drop set and just leaving that as a straight set.
Okay.
So I can get the most out of that one set without using these extended set type protocols. I think I'll prep. You can pull back a little bit in training, but not too much, because that, you know, it, not the purpose of weight training isn't for calorie expenditure, but it is. So you don't want to be taking yourself out of that deficit that you need to be in. But
okay. Hey, you know, I was thinking here, I'm really glad we talked about nutrition first, because I think with training, we could have done the whole show and never even gotten to the food, honestly. I think we can just keep going.
Training. I love training. Like, I know I have my master nutrition, but I just training is what I'm interested in more so.
Yeah, no, so, you can hear your passion in it too. What are your plans? What are you going to do moving forward here? You're obviously, you know, you're in your off season now. You're trying to put some muscle on. Do you have a contest that you're looking at next season?
Yeah, so I did the Dallas Europe last, and I pulled down all the way to 206 was like my lowest weight that I got to in the morning. So I get, you know, I have a little bit of room for that 212 mark. Yeah. And I had a little bit of muscle that I could maybe fit on.
Okay.
And so I'm going to try to make it again, like off my, like off this DEXA scan, for whatever it's worth, it said I have like 230 pounds of lean mass. So it's like, I just don't see that I put that on. So I can't wait off that. I'm just going to diet down. I'm going to do the Chicago Pro.
Nice. Hell yeah. I love that show.
In July. And I've never been to Chicago. So that's another aspect. I just want to go to Chicago.
Oh man. It's a cool town. If you get a chance to train, Quad's gym is really good. There's a couple good gyms there, and just the show itself, everything about it, man, it's a really good place. I think you'll like it a lot.
It's cool. Yeah. I've heard great stuff, and I think my wife and I will take a few extra days out there and just go about Chicago. We'll probably train too. Quad's gym, we'll definitely check that out. But I picked that show because they have open and 212. So if for some reason I am like, I figure if I'm within 8 pounds of 212, like I'll go 212. It just makes sense. Like even my last show is like, I look bigger up there for a 212, which I'm like 5'7". I wouldn't think so, but that's the way it is. So, and for multiple reasons, I don't know if I want to go to the open, just longevity and competitiveness and just a lot of stuff weighs into that.
Sure. And you know what, at least for now, this makes a lot of sense. 212.
It does. And you know, it's tough, man, making that weight. Cause you do make a sacrifice, and you're almost, at least for me, it's hard to bring my best. I can bring my best within those conditions, trying to make weight and everything, but for that, like, you know, eating up into the show and not having to worry about making a weight, it makes a difference in your look. It really does.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But that's been the plan. So I put a little bit of size on, and we'll come in for that show and just see how it goes.
Is there any areas you're specifically trying to bring up?
Well, in the last show, for one, I mean, it's getting down to like nitty gritty stuff. Cause I feel like my ab development was really poor.
Okay.
Which I don't train abs much, and that's like my own, you know, weak point to admit there. And so definitely been doing ab training just to, cause they flatten out a lot when I cut down. And it's hard to like fill out and get them to really pop. So in a lot of poses, there just wasn't a lot of detail in there. And it looks like I'm not conditioned in my midsection, but I'm peeled, but it's just, they're not developed. And so that was been a focus. And then the guy that beat me in that show, he had these tiny little hips. He was 190 pounds and his shoulders were as broad as mine. So just trying to accentuate that look. So my quads are big. So I was just trying to make my more back width, more lats, and more side depth, more lateral. So that's how I built my program for this whole off season.
Okay.
Doing push play. So I have more shoulder work in the beginning of my push sessions. I have a lot more width type movements put in all my pull days. And even in my hamstring days when I do my deads, just so I have some type of extra back stimulus.
Okay.
There. So there's a thought process to it all.
Yeah. Right? I'm looking at your pictures now. I guess I can see that, man. You came in absolutely peeled, by the way. Glutes, hamstrings, lower back, everything looked so good. I wouldn't have thought about the abs until you mentioned it. But yeah, I guess I could see they just, you know what, do you think maybe it has like to do with the length of your torso? Is it, you know, some people have like those real blocky abs and some people don't, you know,
it's genetically. I know. And I sent my pics to Steve Weinberger and he's like, John, you have a long torso. When you really pull up your chest really high and stretch your abdomen out, like it accentuates that. And he's like, just crunch down a little more. And
okay.
I didn't do it at the show cause I hadn't practiced it enough when I got that feedback, but that's what I changed. At least posing now is just crunching down on my abs. And I can really suck my obliques in hard too. So I sacrifice a little width from coming up really big,
yeah.
But I can pull my waist in so much tighter. I think it makes the V taper look a lot better. So
okay.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's a good call on you. Yeah, I do have a longer torso, so crunching down on my abs will be something that I'm just gonna pose differently.
Right on. Yeah, and dude, that's such an easy fix too, you know. That's like,
it is.
It's not like you have to, you know, develop a sweep or something like that, you know.
But I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, shit, man, we're getting down to really nitty gritty stuff. Like, everyone's showing up, like, really complete, you're really good, and that's the pro level.
Yeah.
And you have to really just look at yourself and try to, like, man, break it down, and what do you have left to really improve on and try to get there. So,
you know, looking at you now, man, looking at, you know, I'm looking at one of your hotel picks now, and you're hitting like a, got your like hands on the waist, almost kind of like a most muscular type shot that way. Would you have guessed back when you competed as a middleweight that you would look like this today?
Never, man. It's always been like, I hope I'm not last at the show. It's always, you know, like coming into my first show, I remember like, God, I just hope I'm not last. I end up winning the overall and the novice, and in the open, I won my class. And then it's like, wow, okay, let's go to a national qualifier. I hope I can just not get last. It's like every time I'm moving up this level, and finally, like, you know, once I got to that USA's as a middleweight, it's like, man, I hung with these national level guys. Maybe I could turn pro. And when I did it, it's like, whoa, maybe I can hit. It's always been like that, you know. I don't want to say it's like not having confidence, because I believe in what I can do.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know.
I mean, I think it's like staying. I'm sorry, what did you say?
I don't want to say like I'm humble, because I feel like this is misquoted. I just don't want to say that. But I will say, at least now, like, I have a realistic perspective of what I can do. Hmm. But my goal in mind is like, hell, I'm going to be a 212 champion, you know, like, you know, screw it. I cut myself short at times of my goals and set it way too low. Like, screw it. Let's set the goal like way up there and shoot for it.
Hell yeah.
And along the way, I'm going to get really, really good at, you know, I'm going to get really good. I might not ever hit that ultimate goal, but I'm not going to undershoot it anymore.
I like that. That's cool, man. That's like some cool personal growth too. That's like the kind of stuff that you learn in bodybuilding and then you apply to other areas of your life too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it is. Even for my business, you know, I try to think as big as possible, and for competing, it's been the same thing. Like, I can't train for a show thinking like, all right, I'm going to get fifth place. Like, God, who trains for fifth place? Like, hell no, I want to go get first with this show.
Yeah.
You know, so I have to think like, hey, going to Olympia, like, man, I hope I don't get last. Like, no, fuck it. Let's try to get first.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man. I like it. You know, one more thing I wanted to ask you about was your sponsorship with Animal. I mean, first of all, man, Animal and Universal, it's like they're one of the coolest companies I think there is in the sport of bodybuilding. And I feel like every kid who started lifting, like even at the age of 16, if they could be sponsored by one company, it would be Animal. That's like the ultimate, you know. What's it like? What do you do with them?
Man, it's surreal. Just like you said, like in high school, I had like the Frank McGrath, like Animal posters,
we all did.
And you read those quotes, you're like, oh, I'm going to fucking kill it in the gym today, you know? And they built their company on the journey and the brotherhood of and mentality, right? So it was like intensity. And anyone that trains at that level, it could be bodybuilders, it could be powerlifters, whoever, that was Animal. And I think that's why so many people connected, and it was so motivating. But to have them reach out to me and want me to be on there, it's like, wow, like it's humbling. It's like, I would never think I'd be with training with these guys now and doing their videos, but it's an excellent company to work with. And it's a big company, but at the same time, they're pretty small knit, and it's a family business. And they treat you like family too. It's just a great group of people to work with. And, you know, with their athletes, they keep guys around. It's not like, you know, oh man, you're not placing anymore. Like, let's get the new hot guy in here. You know, it's like Frank McGrath, Evan Sinopani, like they've been with the company for years and years. So they have loyalty with you. And if you give them loyalty back, they show you. So, and then like, yeah, you're part of this mentality of intensity, and it just goes right along with what I love, you know, and how I train. And I guess that's why I'm with them, you know, I fit with the brand.
Yeah, it's a perfect fit, man. So what do you do with them? Do you go, I assume, like out to shows and stuff? Do you do any kind of videos with them specifically, or?
Yeah, so I submit monthly videos and articles, and that's all up on animalpack.com. Okay. And also the Animal YouTube, so you can find a lot of my content there. And then we also go to all pretty much all the big shows, so the Arnold, the Olympia, we'll go to FIBO, over to Body Power. So all the main big shows try to go out to.
Right on. What brought you out to North Americans?
I had some clients competing.
Okay.
Yeah. I had a women's physique and a couple bodybuilders competing out there. So.
Well, damn! If we did it all again, I could have been like, "Hey, John, I will be at Gold's at 1 o'clock. I'm going to be training back. You know, let's get a workout in." Had we done it again, that's what I would have said.
I know, man, and that's just the bodybuilding is cool because it's kind of its own small little world. The connections we make and the relationships we build, and you know, I followed these people forever on social media, and you hear these names, right? And once we cross paths, it's really 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 funny. So.
It's cool, man, and it's cool. You know these guys out there, guys like yourself or guys like Evan. Then I get to meet you people in real life, and you're the exact same person. You know, and that kind of, it means a lot to me. So I, in the show notes, I'm going to have everything that we've talked about. We'll have the website, we'll have your YouTube link, we'll have the Animal Pack website and to your articles and their YouTube as well. I'll get your social media in there. But is there anything else that we should mention besides that stuff? What is your username over there at Instagram so people can follow you?
At JohnJewett3.
Okay, easy enough, man. Is there anything else that we should be aware of that we should check out?
I think that's it, Scott.
Cool.
Covered a lot.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun, man. I really appreciate all your time, too. This means a lot to me, and I know that the listeners are really going to appreciate having you on here.
No. Well, I very much do appreciate your time and being on such a reputable podcast as well, because it is that. So you're definitely at that level. So I definitely really appreciate it.
Ah, well, thanks, man. That means a lot to me. Guys, for another episode of Advices Radio with IFBB Pro John Jewett, we will see you soon.
Advices Radio Network.